I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Welcome to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by Superbook Sports. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports podcast family, and I am excited that I am joined by a very special guest, somebody else over at the Mile High Sports family. It's Drew Kreisman, who covers the Rockies for us at Mile High Sports. He's at Drew Kreisman on Twitter. Make sure to go give him a follow. Drew, thank you so much, man, for copping on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me. Very excited to be here. Excited to catch up with you again, man. It's going to be great. I'm stoked for this. Let's go.
I'm stoked too. I have not done a great enough job of connecting with the Mile High Sports family yet. And so I want to do a better job, as because it's obviously different to Denver Stiffs, and or was different to Denver Stiffs for me. And we've got an office, we've got a group that works right together and things like that. It's weird to me. So I'm right, still trying to get adjusted to that fact, but
studio and everything. It's amazing.
Yeah. So you've been covering the Rockies for how long, man?
If you count my blogging days, this is my 10th season.
Wow.
On the Rockies beat. Yeah. Really my 7th season doing it every single day on the beat, or being at, you know, every home series, not every game. Don't 1 year I did 79 of the 81 home games. That was 2018. Oh. I was at 79 of 81 home games in 2018. Good on them though, for winning 91 games that year for me. Second best season in franchise history. So at least they made it worth my while.
I love it. Yeah, that was a good year. Unfortunately, it kind of came to a screeching halt, and pretty sure it was the NLDS, right? But
they scored, I think, 3 runs in the National League Division Series total against that Milwaukee Brewers team. Those games were actually still pretty close. The Brewers didn't score a lot either, but yeah, that was a rough one, man. That the whole end of that season, the monster schedule, but yeah, it was a brutal series, but we'll always have Tony Walters, won't we? that single back up the middle in Chicago is,
oh my gosh,
the greatest moment in franchise in the last decade, which is both amazing and kind of and sad.
No, it's all good. Like I think Nuggets fans can definitely relate to that though, because it's been for a lot of the time with the Nuggets, there's been some like close misses. And mm-hmm. you could get back to like 2009 with Carmelo Anthony.
Can I relive that nightmare? Can I not? Can I?
Oh,
not?
We don't have to talk about that so strongly. That's perfectly fine with me.
Like, as soon as you said, I said, please don't say 2009. Like, oh no, I can feel that one in my bones. I'm still angry. Yeah. I just sometimes I wake up in a cold sweat and I go inbounds passes.
It's hard to be angry about 2007 with the Rockies. Like that's one of those things that you remember fondly because it was, like you said, the best season in franchise history, I have to imagine, and going to the World Series in a very surprising way. That never draws any ire in terms of not making it, like in terms of not winning the whole thing, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, there were a handful of party poopers who kind of tried to call the whole thing a fluke, and like nobody listens to those people. Like you're saying, there's such an obvious like built-in, call it an excuse or legitimate reason. Like there was a 9-day layoff. Like the Rockies were so good and they had won all those games, you know, 21 out of 22. They were so hot, and then they had to sit around and wait. And you never do that in a baseball season ever. That many, not even the All-Star break is that many days between games.
Right.
And so that, you know, that they got swept by the Red Sox in the World Series is of course disappointing, but no, everyone remembers that as the most magical time in Rockies history. And they should, because it was amazing.
It was awesome. Like I've still got the image of Todd Helton raising his hands. Like that's definitely one of those iconic Denver sports images. So I'm with you there, but in terms of the Rockies and the Nuggets specifically, I think we can both share just not quite getting over the hump, unlike the Avalanche and the Broncos. And those two teams, I think those two franchises have dominated a lot of the national or like the local hype in terms of their success. And kind of rightfully so, just because the Nuggets and the Rockies, they haven't quite done it to the level of each of those teams, at least recently.
Right.
And I'm not really breaking any ground here, and I'm very happy for the Avalanche because that they deserved it after the way that they played over these last 3 years. But it's very interesting to think about the Colorado sports environment and how it's really evolved over the course of, I don't know, 25 years, ever since the Broncos won their first Super Bowl, like our Avalanche won in 1996. The way that we talk about each of these teams and each of these franchises is so different. Do you feel like talking about the Rockies has evolved recently?
I do. It's, you know, it's gotten really rough out here, man. in the last, and to a large extent, rightfully so, because what's interesting to me is I was always a big believer that last core, the team that everybody knows, that even the non-Rockies fans, you knew they had Nolan Arenado, DJ LeMahieu, Trevor Story, Charlie Blackmon, kind of all at once, right? And then that pitching staff, when they were really good in that the two-year span, when it's Kyle Freeland, Hermann Marquez, John Gray, like that team had a lot of potential. And it didn't get anywhere close to reaching it. And then it got totally blown up. And there's just no real sense of hope or future or understanding of how to ever recover from that right now. And so during that time, and really since Jeff Breidich took over, despite those 2 years, I think there's just been this sense of the Rockies as a team stuck in their old ways, in their traditions, that, you know, there was a while where they were exciting, the exciting new kid on the block, and they got to ride that for the 90s into the early 2000s. Some malaise started to kick in, but then they went to the World Series. And then they went back to the postseason in 2009. They were very good. They were very good again in 2010. People forget, even though they fell just short. But over this last decade, I think there really has been this sense of like, okay, when's going to be our time? And I think Nuggets fans it's very similar, right? Like you were excited that they were here. You were excited they were a team. Then when they got Melo and started going to the postseason, you were just happy to go to the postseason, right? But then you look back on 09 and you go, that might have been our only chance, man. And that starts to sink in. I think that similar thing has happened with Rockies fans, with Rockies media. Like 2007 was their only chance and they walked backwards into it and they're never going to be able to do this again because all the, and it's gotten very, very hyper negative, toxic, difficult to talk about the team in an honest way in the last couple of years because everyone's so angry.
And they probably have a right to be, honestly. Right. Just the way that things have broken, the way that the team's been kind of dissolved over the course of these last couple, the number 50 million will always stick out in my head for obvious reasons. Like, come on, it's gotta be very frustrating.
And that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up because that's the perfect, like, and I talk about this on my show a lot and I've talked about it on Twitter. People hate it, but this is the perfect example of like the rhetoric about the Rockies is correct in that they've messed almost everything up. The Nolan Arenado trade is indefensible in a number of ways, but the thing that most people have latched onto is that 50 million.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is the Rockies saved $150 million in the Nolan Arenado trade. When a contract is that big, you're going to have to eat some of it to get most of it off of your books. The money end of it is one of the very few things about that deal that actually worked out in the Rockies' favor. But all the headlines read, Rockies trade Nolan Arenado plus $50 million to St. Louis for five guys you've never heard of. And you're right. It's just like, even when they do something that does make some sense, and I'm sure you've experienced this a lot as well, where it's like, yes, this is bad and that is bad and that's bad. And yes, they screwed this up. And okay, yes, that too. But this one thing, they really didn't screw up. And it's important for us to be diligent about those facts. So I battle people over the 50 million all the time because I'm like, I know how bad it looks, but here's what it is. And that's a tough
thing. It's tough. Like the optics of it is definitely where you're losing a lot of people. And mm-hmm. I feel like the Rockies, the way that the optics have gone over the course of this kind of rebuild that they're on is horrible. It's as horrible as it could possibly get. Like the way that they have, and here's like probably the biggest issue. I think a lot of like fans for the success, like as opposed to fans for just the support and fans for the atmosphere. A lot of people look at the attendance number, for example, look at the party deck that was created during this time. And I'm talking about this from somebody who is not plugged in any way, shape or form. But what I will say is that the optics of that in kind of renovating the experience off the field, but as opposed to fixing the stuff on the field, I think is kind of the opposite in the way that the Cronkies and the way that the Nuggets have really gone about their own rebuild, which just makes it so different to me. And I just in completely different ways, because you have a lot of people that are showing up and enjoying the atmosphere of Rockies games until they watch the game.
right up until they see the final score.
Yeah. Like my brother, he told me a story about how his work group, they went to a game just to kind of get out on a Thursday or Friday afternoon. And he didn't watch a single pitch until the ninth inning and they lost. That's insane to me. But also like it's just that completely different juxtaposition of how the Nuggets have done their own stuff, where they have really focused on getting the on-court product back together, where people feel like they have a legit shot at winning a title this next year. But all of the other stuff, I think you can have some definite qualms with.
Totally. Right. And that's 100% right. I've said many times before that Dick Monfort is actually, now let me get to the end of this sentence, everyone listening. Dick Monfort is a great owner for all of the things that don't matter toward your team being competitive. And you might be like, well, what are you talking about? But there are, as you know, when we get into this, there are actually a lot of things that these owners do. And being a steward of the community and being, you know, everything that Dick Monfort has done to help revitalize Lodo, quite frankly, McGregor Square, as much as there was a ton of negativity around that, that's an incredible place. To your point, where you were talking about the party deck, that was actually an agreement. So again, it's one of those things people think is super negative, but when you know the details, you know that that was an agreement with the city. Certain money was going to be used and it had to be used to improve the premises. So they couldn't use it to go out and buy a pitcher. It had to be used on something. The party deck has been great. everyone, you know, even if people are going there and not watching the games, I get it, but it's actually been a really good thing. And now there are several other teams who are copycatting on that. So he does, you're right. The experience is great. The ballpark is wonderful. Now the area around the ballpark is awesome, but they don't do the on the field stuff right or well at all. They're especially when it comes to the analytics, you know, and I do think these are, you know, very separate issues. And I think the biggest difference I have between most fans, and I would say even a lot of, you know, my brethren and sistren, as it were, in the media, is that there's a lot of people who just quite frankly don't think that Dick Montfort wants to win, or that he cares about winning, that he only cares about kind of being the real estate magnate and the guy who's fixing Lotto. And, you know, I think that's inaccurate. I do think he wants to win. I just don't think he has any idea how. And I think he's been way too hands-on in trying to run things with his kind of culture mindset of, we get Rockies guys and we have Rockies guy and we do it the Rockies way. And it's like, what even is the Rockies way, dude? Like, it hasn't, like, do it a different way. You know, that's where I agree with the consensus. That's where I come together with it. It's like, do something different, man. Do something else.
Yeah. Why do people get so upset about the trade deadline these last couple of weeks?
You know, this one's really interesting. I think there's a combination of things. One, the hype around the trade deadline in Major League Baseball has just gotten out of hand. It's like whatever has happened with the NFL draft in the last 15 or 20 years, like similar, but, you know, on a baseball scale.
Well, because seeing like Juan Soto getting moved, that's a really massive deal. You don't see those kinds of moves in the NBA.
Right. There's just this extreme pressure, especially now in baseball, and the economics of it are such that, and one player just isn't going to change that much on your team. And if a guy like that says he's not going to resign, basically it's a race against the clock. You have to move him as fast as possible. And it's a wild thing that where there's such a disincentive towards being in the middle anymore that tanking is taking over the game. And I know, again, this is an NBA problem as well, but that is really frustrating for me in baseball that there's so much now emphasis. And what really happened is the Astros and the Cubs won the World Series in the last decade. Both of these teams were purposefully bad for 3 or 4 years, like over 100 losses. The Rockies have never lost 100 games in a season. The Astros did it 3, maybe 4 years in a row. And then 3 or 4 years later won the World Series with all these guys that they drafted. And everyone went,
right,
let's all repeat that. But not everyone can do that. Sometimes you just stay the Pirates. You know, and I worry about the Nationals here. You know, these trades rarely work out where you move a star player and you really get back a ton of prospects and those guys lead you to the promised land. Like, it's rare, even though it's the smart thing to try to do. So it's very frustrating. And so around the Rockies, it's like, why aren't they just doing the smart thing that everybody else is doing? You have these guys, you're not going to win. Somebody literally even just said to me on Twitter, you're a bad team and you have good players. You should trade those good players. That's the mentality in baseball now. And I hate it, man. I got to tell you, they're not wrong, but I hate that. Like, what, how is that good for your sport? How is that a good place for any fan base to be in, to feel like you're mad at your team because they didn't trade CJ Cron? Like, he's your best player. He signed through next year. What are we doing? Like, I get it, but also baseball's in a bad spot.
Yeah, it's tough. I think one of the things that's just drastically different from the NBA and MLB is just because when you're in the NBA, those players that are considered your top prospects, those are the young guys that you're holding on to. And the older guys that you're not necessarily holding on to are your CJ Crones and your, who was the other guy that there's the pitcher who they're supposed
Daniel
to trade.
Bard. Yeah.
Daniel Bard, who's there, who's been a fantastic closer this year. It should be, right. Should have been an all-star, honestly. Right. But it does seem to me like, it makes more sense for a team like in the MLB to move those guys just from the outside looking in, just because of the timeline factor that you're looking at, where some of the prospects that you're looking at that are in single A, double A, triple A right now that you're hoping, or maybe the guys that you just drafted are in rookie ball right now or getting close to it. then you have to wait 3 or 4 years for those guys to ever really progress into the players that you need them to be. So I can understand why people would want to take the long view. I really can. It is difficult if you just keep kicking the can down the road, though, and you never draft and you never add those prime talents that you're looking for. Like, I look at the way that the Dodgers have, and this is a horrible example because they have different resources, obviously, but like the Dodgers and the Angels, like, I think actually that's even more of a horrible example because like they have right. two prime talents, two incredible talents that they just haven't been able to do anything with it. Right. So I'm out of my element when I'm discussing this, obviously, but it's just so difficult to think about the Rockies. Like, can they get back to that place where they were competing for playoff berths pretty consistently? Is that going to happen over the course of these next couple of years while guys like CJ Cron and Daniel Bard are around?
Right. I think that's the toughest question for everybody. I do think it's a small likelihood, but I see a path to it. Is it the path they will take? Is it possible for them to get there? If you want me to put on my classic Drew Kreisman, how can this work out? Give us the Rockies therapy positivity lens and give you my best case scenario for the Rockies in the next couple of years. It looks something like this. One, their most exciting prospect who's right on the doorstep is Ezekiel Tovar, a shortstop who's just been destroying minor league baseball throughout the year. We've known forever he's a great defender. He showed up at 19 and he could defend. But he's been hitting the ball over the wall. This guy's going to be a thing. He may be your starting shortstop next season, start day one next year. They've got another wow. couple of guys who are interesting, you know, in terms of prospects, Michael Toglia, the return of Riley Pint potentially as a reliever is a really interesting one, a former first round pick who had electric stuff coming out of high school, but just could not throw a strike to save his life, actually retired for a year, then came back to the Rockies and is now in AAA because he's striking guys out and showing the kind of prodigious stuff that he had before. So there are a few prospects that are going to be ready to go and some exciting ones as early as next year. I also think they're going to increase the budget in the off seasons based on comments that Dick Monfort made during the pandemic about how they were looking forward over the next 3 or 4 years to increase their budget to get back to a certain point. They did it this last off season by obviously signing Chris Bryant, but also making trades for guys like Randall Grichuk. They added payroll commensurate with what they said they would, which suggests to me there are a couple of free agent signings coming in the off season. You know, does that save, you know, you still need a lot of things to go their way. Like, they have down years from all their starting pitchers. I think they need new coaching staffs in here. They have forever needed to put a ton into analytics. Again, there's like all these things they need to do. But I do think that there's enough, you know, talent around here that with the expanded postseason as well, I think that's something that baseball fans are, we're still getting used to this expanded postseason. Which means that the division that you're in matters less and less. I keep hearing people say, well, how are they, can they do all this with the Dodgers and the Padres in front of them? It's like, you can come in third in your division, you can come in fourth in your division and still make the postseason. It's unlikely, but you can still do that. So, you know, I think there are a lot of ways they can get there. Do I think it's likely? No. Do I understand why they think they can continue to push those buttons? And it comes down to their starting pitching. And it's absolutely brutal that all of these guys are having the worst years of their career right now, because I do think this is a better team that should be about a 500 team if their starting pitching was just at their career averages, and they're all down and that kills a season. Sure. So of course they're counting on that, but boy, that was a lot of ifs. I gave you a best case scenario, right? All those things line up. And yeah, they can be an above 500 team that battles for a wild card spot as early as next year. I actually think where it gets really interesting is the year after. Zach Veen just got to AA. That's your top guy. And once you've got Ezekiel Tovar and Zach Veen and some of these other guys who really are star level prospects coming up, and by that time, you'll either know that these pitchers, Freeland, Marquez, Senzatella, have turned it around and you can count on them, and then your team will be better, or you'll know they aren't, and all those guys are going to be free agents, and you go and you can rebuild at that point, and you can bring in a bunch of other starters to go with the what you know will be the next era around the Zach Veens, Benny Montgomery's, the guy they just picked up, Drew Romo, this star prospect catcher that they've got. They really do have some interesting prospects. I know a lot of people, you know, the farm system isn't always highly touted, but there are a lot of individual prospects in the system who are very, very exciting and getting close.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. This is definitely one of those things where it's not going to play out over 1 year. It's not going to play out over like just a brief, short amount of time. It's very difficult, and you have to wait to see what the long-term plan is before fully making a decision on some of these guys. And like with baseball specifically, you have to have more of a probably long-term view than any of these other teams. So right. Just because you are taking time with guys at single A, double A, triple A, and waiting for them to mature into the players that they need to be. So I'm not necessarily surprised that you got to wait for a Zach Veen. You got to wait for the shortstop prospect that you remember that you said. I'm sorry. Jose Tovar, is that the one?
Yeah, Tovar. Yeah.
Tovar. Perfect. So it's not a surprise to know that you have to wait. I think on the Nuggets side of things, they're also like a Sports Business Journal article just dropped where you've got a lot of development. Like there were some, it was just more news about the development, like all the things that they're trying to do. They're basically trying to convert their own version of Lodo in between the like around Ball Arena and in between Empower Field, just trying to convert a lot of that particular area to make it more of an environment, more of a place where people want to be and to experience sports. And
yeah,
I'm not really surprised that both of these teams are kind of in those zones where the Nuggets are, they kind of figured out their competitive product, but not the best way to bring it to people. And the Rockies found a great way to bring people the product, but not necessarily the best way to make that product to the place where it needs to go. So
right.
I'm hopeful that both of our franchises can kind of line up with that at the same time. We can have a nice little golden era with Denver sports over the course of these next few years, because the Nuggets are going to be really good. The hope is that the Rockies kind of get to a place where they are also generating playoff berths and people are enjoying both of these sports at the same time, because people haven't necessarily enjoyed the Nuggets experience as much because they haven't been able to watch the damn thing.
Right.
So it's just very like we have all these unique problems. They're different problems, but they're still problems on both of these sides. So I'm not really surprised that we're kind of both in the same position.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you bring up the not being able to watch it. I was actually talking on the show today about, you know, being able to watch 150 plus Rockies games a year on TV and the way they make that stuff about as accessible as possible. And the fact that you can still to this day get into a Colorado Rockies game for $4 for a Rock Pile ticket for anybody, $1 for kids and seniors. And like, you know, we just had a lockout. We got this season started late and there was this big fight between the owners and the players and a lot of issues that I thought were really important, but the fans were also a part of this fight, as they always are when these lockouts and strikes and things like this happen. And the number one thing that I saw from the fans who were mad at both parties, and I think there's way more problems on the owners, but the number one thing that I saw from fans mad at both parties was, how are they fighting over all this money when I got to pay $100 just to get into the game? And then I got to pay $16 for a beer everywhere I go. You know, the economics of going to a sporting event in most places is absolutely absurd. And at Coors Field, it's not. Take the whole family for under $50, you know, and there's something to that. And sometimes people want to be negative about that. And again, that's where like I draw the line, man. Like, no, the team's terrible. I know it as well as anybody. I can go down through all the statistics and give you the evidence. But, you know, it does matter that you can like take your whole little league team to the ball game, that you can take kids out to the ball game. It's an important part of baseball. I think it's kind of an important part of our culture, honestly. And that it is in some places that have much more prestige, that it has become an exclusive event to go to a baseball game in LA or New York, or even in St. Louis or Chicago. Like that doesn't feel right to me. That's not baseball to me. So that's one thing I think the Rockies not only do well, I think it's something they do better than almost every team in professional sports.
That's important. Like I have had those personal experiences. I grew up as a little league player myself. I actually played through high school at Valor. And so it's not a surprise that people are so upset about kind of the on-court or not on-court on-field product because right. they want they value the experience so much. They want to be able to enjoy it and kind of take advantage of all of those benefits that you just listed off. And I'm not surprised about that in any way, shape, or form, having experienced it myself. So it is cool. Like there are so many ways that these things could go the way, like go a very positive way. The Avalanche have this rabid fan base. Yeah. The Broncos, obviously, like they're still the Kings because of the winning, but also kind of football culture in general.
Sure.
But there is still room for the Nuggets and for the Rockies to be able to entrench themselves into Denver culture. And it's hard, like sometimes with basketball, especially, that's a little bit more elitist. And that's a little bit more like, man, these guys are giants. Like, how can I relate to them specifically? How can I relate to Nikola Jokic? Like, that's a little bit difficult. But I can understand why people would definitely take to the Rockies environment to be like, yes, this is where I want to be. This is where I can enjoy being on a consistent basis. And have a good time with it. And that does hold tremendous value for sure. Yeah.
It's and this is one thing that I think everyone in the Rockies community can agree on. And we all disagree a lot about a lot of things every day. But here's something we all agree on. When that place is rocking, when it's good, there's nothing like it, man. It's like Lodo becomes a giant block party. When even not that long ago in 2018, when they were good and they were going on these runs, they brought back Matt Holliday for one last hurrah, right? Remember all that?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like when Coors Field really gets rocking, that atmosphere is fantastic when you've got important baseball. And I remember because I was having an argument with somebody about the time about, do the Rockies really have culture? Do Rockies fans have culture? Do they really know what's going on out there? Or are they all just drinking in the party deck and not watching until the ninth inning, right? And it's like, well, it depends on the game. And it had been a decade since I had heard, or more actually, there was an old chant from the 90s from Mile High Stadium from when the Rockies played at that. And it was the back and forth. You remember the old, it was go Rockies, like the simplest 90s, we just got a baseball team chant of all time, right? But it was the cool, like the call back and forth. And you won't hear this chant unless it's late in the season and the Rockies are going to the postseason and the place is sold out and all the old heads and diehards and everybody who's been there before will bring it back. And it's really, really cool when that happens because you can tell the difference between the people who are out there just to be there on a random July night and when it really gets good. The fans are passionate. They're into it as much as anybody, and they know their history and they know their baseball. I think Rockies fans get a bad rap sometimes because of things like the party deck and because sometimes they can get super toxic about weird stuff. But the real hardcore diehards, Rockies fans, man, they know how to make Lodo into a party zone, and it's cool when it happens. And that's why everyone wants it to happen more.
No, I totally get it. And that should be where people get to focus on. That's what people want to focus on over the course of these next few years. Hopefully they get to experience that for sure. And it does matter in telling the story of Denver. I do believe that so much of this conversation that we're having is people, especially coming out of the pandemic, just wanting to be able to enjoy themselves again and want to be able to enjoy their lives and enjoy their sporting experiences. And there isn't that much better than going to a Rockies game and just kicking back, having a beer with the folks. Yeah. So I totally, totally get it. Let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to discuss movie trilogies. I knew I wanted to have Drew on to discuss movies because he is a movie buff himself. But for now, we are going to take a break. But first, this podcast, everybody, it's brought to you by Superbook Sports. There is no better time to make your first bet with Superbook this summer. Along with its usual vast betting menu, Superbook already has a lineup for every pro football game this fall. Plus, when you make your first deposit on the Superbook app or sign up at superbook.com, they will match 100% of your money up to $500. It's never too early to start thinking about football at Superbook Sports. Place your bet and start winning today. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Back, pickaxe and roll. Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Appreciate all the love and support on the program. As always, I love doing these podcasts where I get to kind of freestyle a little bit, not necessarily having to focus on the nitty gritty of the Nuggets and the NBA all the time. There will be time for that. It's a long season and a long off season still. But for now, I'm joined today by Drew Kreisman, the Rockies analyst over at Mile High Sports. We just had a nice conversation about just the environment that these teams have really crafted. And now I want to pivot entirely. We're going to talk about movies. We're going off the rails, Drew. I'm really, really excited.
Love it.
A week ago, you polled people and asked them, what is the greatest movie trilogy of all time? And it got me thinking, Drew knows movies. He's got to love talking about this stuff. I'm very curious to hear what he has to say. So you used Lord of the Rings, Star Trek, and Dark Knight as kind of your primary trios. How come?
Yeah, or Star Wars, not to correct, just so anyone listening, I think just Star Wars. Yeah. It's interesting because with Star Wars, you get three different trilogies and you can let people fight over which one is the best. And that's always fun on Twitter.
I love it.
So I really think, actually, though, as much as I don't have a favorite amongst them, I'm actually somebody who enjoys all Star Wars, and some I see as better than others, but I don't hate any of it. Like, some people get really into that. It's weird to me to hate Star Wars. I think the original Star Wars trilogy, though, is kind of this perfect beginning, middle, and end setup, twist, conclusion story that a lot of trilogies or a lot of longer arcing stories try to emulate, and for good reason, right? Like, A New Hope is just this really fantastic introduction to the Star Wars world, to the music of John Williams, to how everything looks and feels, to what a lightsaber is, and Alec Guinness's speech about the Force, and all of it, right? So it's just world building, and here are the characters, here are a couple events, set it up. And then Empire is all twist, and everything is dark, and bad things happen, and nothing is how you thought it was, and I am your father, and all of that. and it leaves you with this like totally ambiguous dark feeling and not knowing. And then in the third, it's the return and the triumphant win, and we save the day and all of that. I just think it's very satisfying for a reason and almost perfectly done. And there's a reason everybody everywhere knows Star Wars. You could find people, you know, in a tribe no one's ever discovered before, and their only thing about the outside world would be that they would know what a lightsaber was or something. Like, it's just a ubiquitous human thing at this point. So you had to go with some Star Wars. Lord of the Rings, I actually think, might be the answer to the question, though. Having gone back and rewatched. Yeah, I mean, I just recently revisited them because there's a new show coming out, The Rings of Power, I'm very, very excited about. And as a giant fantasy nerd of things like Dungeons and Dragons and Final Fantasy, and there's all different kinds, or The Witcher, or whatever, your Game of Thrones, anything you can think of a name that's super fun and cool and exciting and has dragons in it, to put it as simply as possible, or magic, or whatever, right? Elves, dwarves, all these things that we're familiar with, it all comes from Tolkien, almost all of it. And, you know, Wheel of Time, that's another one. It's like, there's so much of it draws from The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and this Silmarillion, this enormous world building. As my brother says, it's just, and he's a fantasy author as well, my brother is like, it's just the greatest world building. He set the bar way too high. Tolkien invented like 26 languages for the world of Middle Earth. Like, what? And so when you go back and watch Peter Jackson's trilogy, like all of that history and stuff that I didn't even know about as a kid, when it's all there. It's also lived in. It's also present. And then apart from a couple little wonky moments of CGI, most of the effects are practical. And so it's aged incredibly well. And the story is just timeless. It's timeless for a reason. There's a reason that it's been, you know, emulated so many times. And I think that Peter Jackson trilogy, especially the extended editions, are just perfect.
Oh yeah. Like I think when I thought of this, when you put that out, I didn't look at the actual poll. When you put that out, the first thing I thought of was Star Wars, just because I think that's what everybody first thinks of when they think of, okay, trilogies. This one happened to have three separate trilogies, I think, that you can particularly choose from. And I think you could make an argument for probably the first two, probably not the last one, but it is so interesting to think about what makes a good movie trilogy. And I think you hit the nail on the head that it has to have a full development. The four things that I really thought of were the buildup, like the third one can't fall off. And I think there are a lot of trilogies that have been, they've been aspiring. The first one I look at, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, like that had so much buildup between those first two movies. And then the third one hit and people were just a little bit left wanting. So yeah. I could totally understand why they'd be a little bit like that one could have been there. It just wasn't.
The next Terminator is another one.
Terminator for sure.
Does that, like, the first two movies are great. And then the third one was like, okay, fine.
this is how we're wrapping it up. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
The next thing is character developments. Like, you have to see these characters. You're introduced to them in the first movie or maybe the second movie, and you see them go through these different scenarios and then go through this building, and you grow emotionally attached to them. Like, that's the emotional attachment is, I think, is one more thing that you grow attached to in the Lord of the Rings, to Frodo and Sam. Like, you want them to succeed, and you see their actual struggle, and you're like, okay, this is how this has to go. And you have to be emotionally attached in order to really believe in that story. And then the fourth is the limited weaknesses in each of the individual movies. I think one of the things that part of that is just the buildup, but like, I think with Back to the Future was another one that I saw listed.
Yeah.
Back to the Future 1, really good. Back to the Future 3, really good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are like, Back to the Future 2, it kind of left a lot of people wanting it in their own little way.
Right.
So I think you have to have three movies that can stand on their own as really good pieces of work.
Yeah.
That all kind of connect together. So that was just like, when you think Lord of the Rings, when you think Star Wars, that's what I think. I absolutely think these are three separate works that all tie together really well, but then can stand on their own as incredible films.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. And a lot of trilogies that people were good. And I felt good when, cause I was seeing a lot of it, like, oh yeah, Back to the Future. I did. Cause that was a common response. Some people, I don't know my Westerns as well. So some people were like the Dollars trilogy. And I was like, I am exactly
with you. Like, I have not seen any of the Clint Eastwood trilogy. Right. Like, it's unfortunate. Maybe I should, maybe because people are saying something that I know, should, right?
But, same. Yeah. to your point, Godfather came up a few times. And again, that's got the one that clearly stands out as not as good as the others. A couple people actually brought up the most recent Planet of the Apes trilogy, which I have not seen. I'm not really into that, but I've heard they're good. So that it was mentioned a couple times made me go, okay.
I'm with you on that, by the way. Like, there's a couple that, like, I've seen clips from them, but not necessarily wanted to get invested in something like that because I didn't think I'd like it. Apparently people do.
Yeah. Same. Yeah, totally. A couple of people mentioned Bill and Ted. I was like, fantastic. Huh. Good for you. Okay. Why not? I can't argue with that. I really liked one that I think later, I'm not finding in the replies. I think we talked about my Discord channel, but it was, so this actually defies everything that you just said about what makes a good trilogy, but that's because it's non-traditional. But I do think that they themselves considered a trilogy, and that's the Cornetto trilogy. which is a series of three movies from Edgar Wright that aren't actually sequels to each other. But Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and At World's End.
Got it. Okay.
Are technically considered a trilogy, but obviously they're not connected. So they don't have that beginning, middle, and end we were talking about, or the character growth or any of those things. So it's
sure.
you, that one you'd have to like rate differently. But I do love those movies, and I was happy somebody brought it up. I was like, oh yeah. There's some Evil Dead fans out there as well. Mm-hmm. Those things are always popular. I'm not a big zombie guy, so I don't know.
I looked, and you mentioned one of the others, that The Dark Knight was one. Mm. Like the Batman trilogy, not the Dark yeah. Knight trilogy, but like you've got Batman Begins, you've got Dark Knight, and then you got Dark Knight Rises. And that one, I don't know if I would choose that one, but it does kind of fit, because I think all three are pretty strong on their own. And I know that there are some people that would think, okay, Batman Begins is not as good, Dark Knight Rises is not as good, but you definitely don't lack for stuff in the middle, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm actually a big defender of Rises. I think that movie gets a bad rap because there are a couple of things in it that are like really ridiculous leaps of logic. And I'm with everybody on like, there are some plot holes and stuff. But that movie to me is so thematically strong. It has such an interesting, and it was so timely in terms of, you know, basically just the scene where Bane goes into Wall Street and redefines what it means to steal money. Like that was that was an interesting time to be having that conversation in a comic book movie. And so I thought there was a lot about that character. The portrayal, obviously, by Tom Hardy was pretty universally loved. That was pretty fantastic. So there's a lot of weird things in Rises for sure. But I thought thematically it was just so strong that I didn't mind some of the other little things. Obviously, the best film of the trilogy there, you're right, is the middle one. The Dark Knight is, if you want to call it the greatest comic book movie of all time, I won't fight you. I would probably give that honor to Logan.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
But the Dark Knight, I will say, is probably the best made movie of all time that happens to feature a comic book hero.
I you're not going to get any arguments from me on that front. Like I love that movie, and I rip Heath Ledger. I actually just recently talked about this in the mailbag that I did yesterday, that his portrayal of the Joker, it's like, I wish that had gone on over the course of multiple movies. It's good that it didn't, because stretching it out too much probably would have lifted the kind of pulled back the curtain just a little bit too much. But it was just so tension filled and just so crazy that I think people really latched onto it for sure. So I'm not surprised. Like that could be the trilogy. Like that could be the greatest trilogy. It would not surprise me if people thought that way. So
yeah.
Two others that I throw out there are Indiana Jones and the Bourne trilogy. I love each of those trilogies for different reasons, not necessarily as universally loved. And I think a lot of people like John Wick more than they like the Bourne trilogy.
People brought up John Wick, yeah.
I don't subscribe to that. Like I honestly think that Bourne was like the OG there, but whatever.
Yeah, I've only seen, I think, the first two Bourne movies, and I haven't seen any of the John Wicks. Not really my style of movie, though. It's funny because my mother is a big John Wick fan. You gotta watch these, dude. I'm like, what? Really, mom? This is like, oh, Keanu kicks all kinds of ass. I'm like, all right, cool. My mom's digging on Keanu, but you know, it's and Indiana Jones. I love those movies. I especially loved them when I was a kid. I haven't seen them in a while. I should probably revisit that. That would be a fun rewatch. It's been a minute. I think maybe because that fourth one, I went and saw that Crystal Skulls thing in the theater. Oh, yeah. And I was just like, what in the world is going on right now? And so I haven't revisited Indiana Jones ever since.
No, I totally understand that feeling. And that's honestly why you might be able to remove that from the trilogy conversation, because when you try to extend it, it can go wrong. And so I definitely understand that. Right.
And like, I took a look at the, cause there are like individual trilogies in the MCU, but I was just like, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to try to do like Captain America. I almost went with that because I really love First Avenger and Winter Soldier. I love right. Civil War too, but I have problems with that movie. And that one's almost universally beloved. I love it, but I have issues with it. But Winter Soldier, I think, is one of the best movies in the MCU ever. And so I thought about taking the Captain America trilogy, but there's so much other stuff that informs it. And the MCU, like big extended universes, are their own thing. I love them. They're their own thing now and they're great, but a trilogy is a different thing, I think.
For sure. And like, it is difficult, like you said, when it gets tied up into that universe of other movies and experiences, that it has to be able to stand on its own. And it probably does, but it's just so interwoven with everything else that's apparently going on in that universe. So,
right. You know what nobody mentioned, and I only just thought of right now, and I'm mad at myself for only just thinking of it right now, is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trilogy from the 90s, the live action. Like, it's not the greatest of all time, but those movies were awesome.
I love it. That's hilarious. Like, I have not seen those. Like, I've just, really? it's crazy that like, cause you get into these different perspectives, and like, I haven't seen, I've seen one of the Planet of the Apes movies and part of another, but like, that's one that people would be like, you haven't seen those? Those were right. So big. And I'm just sorry. It's like, that seems like a rewatch for sure. Or watch for sure.
Yeah, man, those were fun. I had a bunch of those because I'm doing these rewatches with my brother, but there are some from that time. If you're like, oh, you should watch Goonies or whatever. I was like, no, I actually have never seen Goonies or The Lost Boys. Those are two from like that time period. They'd be like, yeah. You got to watch those. I'm like, I suppose I should. Now, Top Gun. I haven't seen the new Top Gun. Everyone says you're missing out. Everyone says it's great. Like, I gotta get in on the action. So, yeah.
What about Die Hard?
I saw the first Die Hard and was like, I'm good. It's not, again, not really my genre. Not a big Bruce Willis guy. But I did enjoy, I mean, the more an Alan Rickman guy. Alan Rickman's not in the other ones.
What a classic. Yeah. Alan Rickman's fantastic. I'm a Harry Potter nerd. Like, that's where I grew up for sure. Yeah. But no, like, that's definitely, like, Die Hard is definitely more in line with John Wick. So not really surprising that you're kind of, I guess more tied to that.
Yeah.
So it is interesting though, like thinking about all of these, a lot of them are more nerd culture movies. Like, we haven't, like, Dollars and The Godfather, and like, I guess Back to the Future is kind of nerd culture too. And sure, Indiana yeah. Jones isn't necessarily nerd culture, but a lot of them are more in the, like, you build up a fan base, you build up a group that you definitely cherishes your movies and will go and see every single one, guaranteed.
Right.
But the ones that are really special, I think, are the ones that just break into the mainstream and stay there. Like the Dark Knight trilogy, the Batman trilogy, I think is probably the biggest one that's outside of nerd culture. But even that, like, is just kind of nerd culture for a variety of people because right. it's the Batman.
Right. On. I agree. I think the Dollars and the Godfather are really the ones that are most outside of, and they've, you know, they're still kind of around. I guess they're still an appreciate. I knew people in college who were really into Godfather, and I, because it wasn't that long ago, I was like, I don't know. Well, let's ask the kids these days. The kids these days still watch The Godfather? Somebody let us know.
No, we do not. It's a 25-year-old man. No, we do not.
I was never really into those either, though. And yeah, you're right. It's interesting, right? There's not like a sequel to Citizen Kane or Gone with the Wind or anything, right? But those are all based on books. And so what's interesting is that, you know, a lot of these movies that are based on books, they have their beginning, middle, and end. And a lot of the nerd culture stuff, either you're George Lucas and you're making it up as you go along and you just create, or it's based on these comic books, which are serials. So of course you should have more than one story. I've always said for a long time, I know, like, a long time ago, people were starting to already get on, is there going to be fatigue for the superhero stuff? And some people are experiencing it and some aren't, but I said, we got to get past the origin story phase. And we didn't even really do that until like 2010, because the most interesting thing is not becoming the superhero. As we all know, now that we've seen 100 different origin stories. They're all kind of the same thing, aren't they?
Sure. That's why they're called origin stories. Like people know exactly what you're doing.
The interesting thing is living life as whatever your thing is, and being a symbol for whatever you're a symbol for. And it's living that day to day and all the myriad of problems that would come up. So for me, it's just, of course, comic books should be huge extended universes or television shows, because trying to tell the story in one movie never made sense to me, or even three sometimes. So we talked about the Sam Raimi one. The first two Spider-Man movies are great. And then they were like, let's introduce a bunch of new characters and try to wrap it all up in an hour and a half. Like, what? We wouldn't have accepted that out of the cartoon from the 90s. We would have been like, no.
No, it's too bad that, like, because I think there have definitely been a lot of movies that have tried to replicate that over the years, where you try to come up with the big hit trio or the big hit sequel. And so there's a lot of people and a lot of like folks that criticize the sequel and trio era, where you're trying to come up with new content, or they're wanting you to come up with new content rather. Yeah. And it's tough, like, you're, because a lot of it is being pulled from source material. You're right. Like, I have to imagine that we're not going to see another person like J.R. Tolkien. Like, it's just not going to happen to that degree. I think the closest probably was J.K. Rowling, and for obvious reasons, they're trying to separate from that too. So
yeah, right. And that's wild. Become problematic. Yeah, no, I agree. I think with there's an interesting potential new contender. I think I will have to count the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy once they wrap that up, because that seems to be much more straight in line, even though it's like they jumped into the other movies for a second, but they've had a much more straight line first and second movie. And it sounds like, from everything I've been reading about from James Gunn, third movie is going to be it. It's going to be the last Guardians, at least the last of this team. So I'm going to count that as a trilogy, and that's been phenomenal. Okay. So there are still, and there are a lot of these great graphic novels that I still think are left untouched to be done, but I think most of them are going to be television shows. You and I were talking before we came on about Sandman, and watching the show, I'm like, this could have been a pretty cool movie trilogy, but no, this has, not only does this need to be a show, it needs to be several. There's like 75 Sandman books. And again, it's that thing where they're, once you get the premise, now it's about telling a bunch of different stories inside of the premise. And that it becomes a cool thought exercise, a lot like Star Trek, you know, where every episode can be a thought exercise. And right. That's, I think, going to be the future of a lot of these comic book movies when they're getting into the deeper stuff beyond. And I love the masked superhero stuff. And some of it does get really, really deep, but not every comic book features people in masks punching other people in masks in the face, you know? So I think there's some really deep ones to get into, and I'm actually very excited for that future.
I think The Witcher, I think, kind of lines up with that a little bit, just because they've taken some of the stuff from the actual games and from those stories and repurposed that into seasons of, and rather than necessarily. Well, there is definitely some overlap there. I'm trying to think of a good one where it's more like that, where you're just taking from the individual source material and not necessarily trying to build off of that individually.
You know what's a really interesting example of that? Detective Pikachu.
Oh yeah.
Detective Pikachu is really great because it rather than like trying to tell a story of like any like Pokemon game or whatever, it just tells its own original story. It just makes up characters and does its own original thing, but it just sets it in a world where there's Pokemon everywhere. I'm like, that's actually genius. So then you're not like beholden to the source material, right? And I think they're doing a similar, now Rings of Power, I think, is going to walk this line in the Lord of the Rings, because like some of it, they're going to be beholden to the Silmarillion, but a lot of it's going to have to be their own stuff. I know they're like shrinking time together. They're taking like 1,000 years and going to try to tell over like 100 or whatever. So you have to take those kinds of creative licenses. And you're going to, you know, and creators create, you create your own character, your own new thing or whatever. So I get all of that, but there's a tightrope you got to walk when you do that. But I, oddly enough, I was like, Detective Pikachu, dude. Castlevania also did a really good job.
I love Castlevania. Castlevania is so funny, man.
That was awesome. I was like, this is great because I played all those games when I was a kid and I was like, this is not what I necessarily would have thought of to do with a show, but it's brilliant. I wouldn't change a thing.
It's like, wonderful. Man, there's just a lot of great content. And I think a lot of people criticize a little bit too much, but like you just listed off Detective Pikachu as one of the ones that people should check out as a, hey, this is a really good example of totally. What you're talking about here. So I think that there's a lot of stuff that kind of gets swept under the rug that people should try to unearth and be like, hey, look, this was actually really good. And so I respect what a lot of these, what a lot of podcasts and a lot of platforms do where they try to unearth some of these and really go in depth on a lot of this different content. And I'd love to do some of that here at MHS. Like that'd be great. Like I would really enjoy my time.
Same, brother. Hit me up anytime you want to do any of that. Let me go a little old man on you here and say, when I was a kid, you know, I legitimately didn't get cable TV in my house. So I was like 12 or 13 years old. You know what I mean? Yeah. So until that time we had like four channels, just the local channels. And you watched what was on, man. And so now that we live in a world where it's like, if you're a big horror fan, it's like, my wife watches American Horror Story, loves it. Not for me, but I know a lot of people go, that's great content, right? All the stuff we've talked about here today. I know people that love these like dramas with rich families fighting with each other. That's a big thing now. Billions or Severance or whatever. I don't watch those shows, but I hear they're phenomenal. Great. I'm so happy you have a thing to watch. Why are we all tearing down each other's stuff? You know, to your point, there's so much. There's never been more great television, film, video games at our fingertips than there is right now. So don't focus on the things that you hate. Love and celebrate and talk about the things that you love, you know, because there's something out there for everybody.
Drew Kreishman, spreading the love. I love it. This is great.
That's where I'm at. So feel the love, baby.
We should get together and talk about the Rings of Power at some point. And then House of the Dragon. I assume you're a House of the Dragon fan.
Oh, did you open up a can of worms? I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. And yeah. I never read the books, just watched the show. I know a lot of people have read the books. I didn't like the ending, but I defend it. I'm one of those people.
Fair.
You know, like and I really hate what happened and the negativity around it. And a lot of it's all legitimate. But like, I really think that like what I defend basically is saying it didn't ruin the show. It's still maybe the greatest television show of all time. There was so much about it that was good, from the writing and the acting down to things like the costume design and the music and the set pieces, and everything about it was so good. And that it seems like so many people want to poo-poo the legacy of the entire thing because the last season was admittedly disappointing, if not downright bad. It's like, okay, yeah, but all of this stuff was amazing. And it wasn't just amazing because of where it was going or where you thought it was going or whatever. So I'm glad they're doing House of Dragons because that story has an ending. The book is over. I listened to the audiobook for that. It's a phenomenal story. All they have to do is not mess it up. Just don't mess it up. So yeah, I can talk Game of Thrones forever, man.
It should be. We're going to do it. We're definitely going to do it when that comes out. I am looking forward to it for sure. Drew, you've been awesome, man. Like this has been great. We should definitely do this again. Maybe we make this not monthly, but like a consistent time where we get together and talk about our shows and talk about our movies. That'd be a lot of fun.
I would absolutely love that, Ryan. That'd be great, man.
Awesome. For everybody else, that is going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by Superbook Sports. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I'll be back on Monday discussing, I think, Aaron Gordon, I think is the player that we are going to dive into and really kind of go into the intricacies of what he can do next year. Should be a lot of fun. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you, Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.